Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. Like, I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below.
We have a special treat with us today, Richard Strozzi Heckler. Richard is the founder of the Strozzi Institute, master coach and leadership trainer, PhD psychology and Aikido seventh degree black belt. And the session title is Embodying the Mystery, Exploring the Depth of Somatics. Richard, welcome.
Thank you, Manal. And hello to everybody. As you said, this might be good morning, good afternoon, good old dark 30. And it's a pleasure to be here with you. A little bit more about why I'm speaking here is that, number one, this title, Embodying the Mystery, is the working title of my ninth book. And I just sent that in to the publisher yesterday. So it's kind of a celebration day for me. And that working title, Embodying the Mystery, Notes from a Somatic Pilgrim. And when I first started bringing somatics into organizations, and then I said, we're going to work with the body, everybody stand up. They looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, this was 25, 30 years ago. And they look like, what is this guy? What does my body have to do with anything? And so basically that was a big speed bump, but my come from really is around spirit and energy and the ground of being, which is the spiritual life. And I knew that I had to take time to do that. So I put that in the closet, and this whole notion of embodying the mystery has always been with me. And for right now, I think it's a crucial time for that. I'd also like to mention that I come from the tradition of the bodily arts. There's three main stools that I sit on here for my work. One is I started martial arts when I was 12 years old, and have been doing it ever since. Started with judo, jiu-jitsu, ranked in all those competitive arts. I taught martial arts combatives in the Marine Corps. And for almost 50 years, I've been a practitioner and student of Aikido. I also went to university on a track scholarship. And so I learned so much around the soma, the body, in these areas. And fundamentally, it's that if you practice, is the way that you change. Practices are fundamental to our transformation. And the question we need to ask ourselves is what you've been doing now, is what you're practicing now, is that relevant to where you want to go, to the way that you want to be? Because we inherit a lot of practices, we unconsciously adopt a lot of practices, they shape us, And it's critical that in terms of our transformation, the transformation of our society, that we go, what practices do we need to let go of? What practices do we need to move forward with? I also, in that domain, I learned the importance of having a good coach. Now, coaches has a different meaning now, but the whole notion of a coach, a mentor, or a guide, the value of that is without measure. Somebody who is that far ahead of you that can guide you along the way, slow down, speed up, come back to center road, those things. And also really the joy of training with other people. Tremendous joy in that, where that we can be self-challenging, we can challenge each other, we can challenge each other, and everything can rise to the top in that way. I'd also like you to know that my PhD in psychology, I wrote my dissertation entitled The Mind-Body Interface. So this was in the mid-70s, and I was very, very interested in this whole conversation, which was not then called mind-body. We have a different interpretation of it now, but that was my research inside of that. And I would say a fundamental thing that I learned there that's important for us to look at is that emotions, our emotional life is central to who we are as human beings. Our organizations, I've worked all over the world. I live in Northern California, so I'll talk primarily about the West, although I've worked in Asia and South America as well, Europe. But this notion that when we go to work, we are really taught that leave your emotions in your trunk of your car, put them in your boot, and then go to work and be a good, productive worker. And now we know, as the American Medical Association says, that somewhere 85-90% of physician visits are because that we don't know how to handle stress. We don't know how to handle our own pressures, that internal pressures and external pressures in the world. So that the practices of somatics and embodiment is crucial for that. I'd also like you to know that I began a meditation practice in 1969. I still do a meditation practice. And what I've learned there is that we can train our attention. And that is really critical for being successful in the world and being fulfilled. In other words, that we don't let those 85,000 thoughts that happen every day and those images that come up run us, that we're able to self-collect ourselves. Energy follows attention. Choice follows awareness. And if I would say martial arts had to do with our muscular system, skillful action, and emotions, had to do with our organ system, our heart, our guts, that meditation has to do with our nervous system and how that we can train our nervous system to focus real specifically, open up, turn into ourself specifically and open up. So that being said, I also want to really out in the room here that, as you all know, that we're in a time of tremendous pressure. There's a viral pandemic, and people now are just starting to name a anxiety pandemic, that there's tremendous fear in the world right now around uncertainty, around what is the post-COVID world look like, when will that happen, and et cetera. And one of the things that we can use in embodiment is how we can both center ourselves and ground ourselves in that while we can take effective action. not center and ground just to disappear for herself, but we can connect out and into the world. And then in my part of the world, you know, we're in our fourth year of fires. And there's smoke here up at the ranch. There's fires nearby. We have the pressures of tremendous pressures on our institutions and our, how our institutions are going to hold or not to hold. So I know that there's a number of really, really competent people speaking during this time. And there's a lot to be learned about how we can manage our anxiety. We can dignify our anxiety, but use the energy of that so that we can be effective, compassionate, and wise actors in the world. So the other thing, I want to do a practice here, but the other thing I want to bring up is this, is that I would claim that one of the reasons that we are out of touch with the ways that we pollute our water and the ways that we sustain our air is because we're out of touch with our bodies. And when I say out of touch with our bodies, what I mean is we're out of touch with our feeling self. Fundamentally, in the West, we are trained to be rational beings, to have the powers of analysis, logic, cognitive intellectualization, all good. We are rational beings. But what's been pruned out of us is this capacity to feel and to sense for ourselves. And by doing that, we forget that we're part of nature. We're part of this water. We're part of this air. We're part of these stones and these trees. They're who we are. I would also claim that one of the reasons that so much conflict now, which is a daily part of our life, so quickly precipitates into violence. Instead of seeing conflict as a generative process, as we do, at Strozzi Institute, and how to work with conflict so that there's actually a win-win and we go into larger and more important questions, is that it often just precipitates into violence. And that has to do with us being out of touch with our feeling self. If we don't feel ourselves, we can't feel others. Without feeling others, we don't recognize that by hurting people, animals, the water, the air, the trees, we're actually hurting ourselves. And I would also like to claim that one of the reasons that there's this increased split between those that have and those that don't have is because we are out of touch with our feeling self. There's this big margin between marginalized people and elite people in class, in race, in gender, in economics, and ethnicity. And this gap is growing more and more and more. And this will only cause more mischief for all of us as we move forward. Not only as we move forward, our children move forward, and our grandchildren move forward. And one of the medicines I say for these three things is that we begin to get more in touch with our feeling self. And this really needs to start with the systemic educational systems that we have so our children can have that. And we can all be transformed in this particular way. And that is one of the fundamental focuses that I have in my work at Strozzi Institute, where we have the systematic coaching track and we have the embodied leadership track. So let me invite you in to a practice that we call centering. Centering means it brings you into the present moment. It means that you become more open to possibilities instead of running down your alley with your blinders on. You're open to possibilities, and that you are connected. You're connected to what you care about. You're connected to your principles and to your ethics. You're living inside of your own skin. So we can do the sitting, we can do the standing, you could do it lying down. We mostly associate lying down with sleeping. So the fundamental thing is, how do you keep your spine straight? And we work in four dimensions. And these four dimensions are in all living things. There's length, there's width, there's depth, and there's an organizing principle. So from a single cell to a rose bush, to a dog, to a human being, to a giraffe, we all have length, width, and depth, and an organizing principle. So if you're able, and if you're willing, go ahead and stand. Sitting is fine. And I'm going to have your feet about shoulder length apart, even if you're sitting. And let's work with length first. And what I want you to do is that I want you to align your head, your shoulders, your hips, your knees and ankles all together. So you're in your length. Now, you may first say, well, that's how it is. That's actually how we are. But once you get trained to observe people, this is what you see. Heads are forward, shoulders are caved in, I'm leaning back, my pelvis is tipped. So internally, I'm coming into harmony with gravity by bringing my attention straight down and feel, sense, or imagine the space between your spinal vertebra. Feel, sense, or imagine that the soles of your feet are open and the crown of your head is open. So you're a conduit for this life energy that moves through you. In my traditions I've studied in the East, we call this the bridge between heaven and earth. The human is the bridge between heaven and earth. Our feet are on the ground for action. We have a moral and spiritual vision. And then along this length, relax your eyes. That means come behind your eyes, let your eyes soften so your peripheral vision opens. The eyes are connected to the brain by the optic nerve. If the eyes are tight from too much screen viewing, too much thinking, trauma, the eyes are contracted, that gets transferred back to the brain. The brain contracts, that contraction goes down through the central nervous system. The system's designed that the teeth never have to touch. So relax at the hinge, the jaw, and the chin, and relax your tongue. Together, let's all take a deep breath, bring your shoulders up to your ears, deep breath, exhale, and let them drop. And one more time, inhale, bring your shoulders up, exhale, let them drop. The system is designed so the mass of the body, what is the mass? It's our muscular system. The system is designed so the muscular system rests on the skeletal system. So feel, sense, or imagine that those shoulder muscles are relaxed and settling onto the shoulder girdle. The the system is designed that the breath is at the belly. It's rhythmic and it's deep, just in the belly, below the diaphragm. Just like a horse will do a big breath out, take a deep breath and just let it go. Let your breath drop. Pelvic girdle, release those sphincter muscles, release your buttocks, your hips. If you're not sure if they're released or not, tighten and then release. Come down to the legs. Again, these large, strong muscles in your legs, longest and strongest in the body, let them rest on that thigh bone so they're not holding you up. Knees are soft and you're letting the energy move all the way through the feet. So we say length is your human dignity. You're not trying to overachieve. You're not apologizing or shrinking. You're just right in your length. Starting with the feet, let's go to width, balance left and right in the feet. Coming up to the knees. If you need to wiggle in there, feel free to do that. At your hips. Coming to the rib cage. Maybe at the rib cage, you might start to feel your breath. The rib cage opens, maybe like a book, or like a clamshell. Balanced at the shoulders and your head's balanced. This is our social being. This connects us to the world. The child becomes social, really social, when they come to an upright position and they're connecting to the world. They can grab things. They can see farther. So can you feel your clothes on the outside of your body? Can you extend beyond that into the room you're in? Is there something living there? Another person, a cat or a dog, flowers? I think even my wooden table here came from a tree. Can you sense, feel that? Or even imagine you are? And from here, extend out to a loved one that's not in the room with you. It's in our width in which we open our boundaries and where we make our boundaries. Now let's go to depth and let's start with our back body. So many senses in front, plus all our machines in front, so we often forget our back body, the long muscles in the backs of the legs. Your buttocks. From the hips up to your neck, your back. And have a feeling of settling back and into yourself. Settling back into your history, your competencies and mastery, your experience, your teachers, your loved ones, your wounds, everything that brought you to this moment now. Coming from the back body through your torso, that dark space out into the front to your belly center, your heart center, and your eye center. And with your back body, you can settle back into yourself. Now put your thumb into your belly button and let the palm of your hand, either one of them, rest. So your palm is resting below your belly button. Feel from the inside your palm. And let your palm feel your lower abdomen. This is your center of gravity, called Hara, Tantien, Kaph. It's one of the centers in the body. There's also the heart center, the eye center, the throat center. Drop your hand, but keep your attention dropped. So what we just did in that short 5 or 6 minutes is that we brought ourselves in the present moment. We started to open up to new possibilities, and we're connected to our own commitments, our ethics, our shape, our form. And when we do this, it's clinically impossible to be anxious. That's kind of the price of admission. Anxiety in the DSM-IV Diagnostic Psychiatric Manual says one of the things we see in anxiety is there's a low-grade contraction in the body, the breath is high and shallow, and I'm running all of these circular thoughts over and over again. So let's sit down. And just take your own note about what shifted, if anything, doing that practice. Straightening and settling. Feeling our back body. Letting our breath drop. When that happens, in many ways, we come into our more mature self. And it's the place where more wisdom resides, more compassion resides, and more skillful action resides. When we work in embodiment, we can think of working embodiment in these kinds of ways. We work on the body, we work with the body, and we work through the body. So on the body would be something like, I get migraine headaches, I have constipation, I have low back pain, and those symptoms are so loud that we need to deal with those symptoms before we can go deeper into ourselves because they're so loud. There's a way to also work with those symptoms that are doorways to something deeper. But really, at a fundamental level, we want to see how we can work with those. Modern medicine can do it. Also somatics in the sense of self-healing, body work, yoga, those alternative medicines where my attention and working internally to myself can work with those things. Working with the body means we start to get in touch with the emotional aspects of our life. For example, you work with somebody who has these migraine headaches, and because their neck is out or there's a contraction in the neck or their jaw, and you do body work on them, give them exercises, and they feel better. They come back late, 10 days later and they go, God, it's back. You fix it again, 10 days later, they're back. So then you begin this conversation and you say, if you pay attention to when this headache begins, what do you say about that? What do you notice there? And then they would say, oh, you know what? Every time I have this conversation with Bobby or Jane, I notice that I start to bite down on my jaw. I notice I begin to hold my breath. So you realize now we're at the origin. We're at the beginning of that headache, and it has to do with how I am in the world with others. And how am I organizing myself in that way? And that we then from there begin to see that it's just not having the awareness or the insight. What's necessary is that I need to change my shape. of myself. For example, I live out in the country. We have sheep, cattle, horses, et cetera, around. And some years back, there was a mountain lion that came and was eating, they were taking a lion every day. Excuse me, the mountain lion was taking a sheep every day. People were upset, they were angry. And then it started taking the dogs and the cats, and people then became afraid. And then they thought, I got to protect my young children, and when I go out, et cetera, et cetera. And when human beings are afraid, one of the things that happens is their shoulders come up. And we know by so much research that if you take a picture of somebody who's truly afraid, they see something fearful, or they're in a moment of fear, and you show it to a tribesperson in the highlands of New Guinea, what are they feeling? They'll say fear. You go down to the streets of Paris and say, what are they feeling? They'll go, that's fear. So, for example, hypothetically, in terms of to really transform ourselves, we have to transform our shape. I talked to my neighbor and I said, you know what? The county trapper has trapped the mountain lion and it's all gone now. The shoulders are up and they say to me like this, they say, are you sure? I said, positive. They trust me. And then they go, oh, what a relief. And their shoulders are still up. Inside of their thinking, oh, I'm not afraid, there's nothing that predisposes you to fear. Just this shape here predisposes you to fear. Or an emotion. This predisposes you to mistrust or suspicion. You may not feel that, but that's what's happening, is coming out of your shape. Plus, you are building an assessment of yourself with others. So in working with the body, you really begin that conversation that really to become self-healing, self-generating, and self-educating, that it's necessary to change the shape of yourself. And then when we work through the body, what we do is we deepen in these practices, like the centering practice, and numerous other practices, we deepen in those so that we get more and more intimate and connected to this core life energy that moves through us. And then we begin to learn how to trust it in a way so that we will be informed by it. And once we begin to touch into the wisdom and the intelligence of that life core energy, which has been cultivated on life on this planet for over 3 billion years, we begin to see that it is one of our most powerful grounds, a ground of being. And what begins to happen is that this energy, as we begin to surrender to it, eclipses the self. It doesn't mean I don't have a personality I can't walk, move in the world with, but it's not the Richard or the I or the character of me that's running things. What I become informed with is this energy is wanting to take care of my dignity, my security and safety, my sense of belonging, of being loved and to give love, to be able to adapt well and to be reciprocal and see that we are in reality interconnected with all other beings. So let me tell you a story that happened to me a long time ago that really began to guide me. And when I say a long time ago, it was in my early 20s. I was studying Chinese martial arts. I had a teacher named Mr. Li Li Ta, profound influence in my life. He was an outstanding martial artist and a painter and a calligrapher. And I would go into San Francisco and in a park, mostly Chinese population, and study in his classes. And once he was training with me, and he was a little more fierce than he usually is. And I couldn't move him, and he would throw me off. And finally, he took me, he says, come with me. And we walked to the corner of the grass. And he said to me, listen to me. He held up his finger like that. Listen to me. Now, Mr. Lili taught had done this before, and then he might punch a nerve center in my body, or he might sweep my feet. So I was a little bit vigilant. But he began to tell me a story of a 6th century famous painter and philosopher, who I found out later, whose name is Wu Daozi. And he was famous throughout China, and he was painted paintings for the emperor. And he said, you know, he used to have paintings of these, of the rain invoking dragons that were so real, the tears would come out of the dragon's eyes. So at this point, I'm in a big segue. We're doing martial arts. Now I'm learning about this Chinese painter in the 6th century. And I'm going, what's going on here? And he says, the emperor once asked Wu Daozi to go to this new province, see the landscape, and bring him back paintings. Wu Daozi came back, no painting, but went to this 50-yard wall of the emperor's palace, started at one end, and drew this landscape continually, every once in a while dipping his paintbrush in, all the way to the end. And at the very end, he drew this cave or this grotto. And then he jumped into it and disappeared. So there I am going, wow, a few minutes ago, I'm doing Chinese boxing. Now I'm getting a lecture on this Chinese artist. And Mr. Lili Ta looks at me seriously, he holds up his fingers again, and he goes, do you understand? And really shamefully, I was like, I don't understand. And he looked at me again, and he put his hand on my shoulder, his heavy hand, and he says, you understand? And again, I said, no. And I could tell he was somewhat dissatisfied with my answer, but he kind of shook his head like this and went, hmm. Then he patted me on my shoulders, and he said, well then, relax these. And he patted me in my tummy, and he said, and breathe down here. So I practiced that, and I still practice that. But what happened to me was, and I'm sure you've all had this experience of you get a nugget from something like a seed, and all of a sudden it's with you for years and years and years. It falls on your lap and it bursts open and you see the meaning of it. And the meaning that I saw of that after a lot of practice, many exemplary teachers, was that in order to really allow your art to come through, really allow your essence to come through, you have to disappear. You, the I, the self, the ego, you have to disappear. And that has been profound in me in my early practices of that, I will then train harder and I'll train longer and I'll train faster, actually generated more ego in me. And then I had to begin to learn to deeply relax, and relax in the sense that the Vajrayana sect of Tibetan Buddhism says, my paraphrase, to really be enlightened, you have to know how to relax. Or my teacher, Chogyam Trungpa, would say, relaxation is enlightenment. And that is really letting go of the self. That's a big chew to do. But I think that it's also one of the promises of the embodied life. And, you know, when this, one of the first somaticist or embodiment people in the West was Wilhelm Reich, who recognized that as a student of Freud's, he recognized that the neurosis of the human being probably was in the tissues. And through, you had to work the tissues through breath, touch, gestures. And then he came to the West. And then we've had this kind of evolution of somatics we can become self-healing through body work, through bodily practices, through breath practices, and we can become self-healing physically and also emotionally, including the body in that kind of way. And as somatics and embodiment has matured, I really want to put forward that it's in order for us to take this good medicine and bring it into the wider world where these ills are, our climate crisis, the tremendous violence that's happening, and weapons of violence, and a gap, a big gap that's happening between the very rich and the very poor, those that have and those that don't have, is that we need to move into this more primal, deeper core energy, a greater awareness, and not awareness just that I see these things and know these things, but one that is brings me to action to do something so that I, as this world unfolds, and your grandkids say, what were you doing then? And you can say, these are the things that I saw. This is how I grew and transformed myself. And I took it into these kinds of actions. And let me read a poem to you. I'm going to want to read two poems to you today. And the first one, they are both by American poets. This is Wendell Berry. Wendell Berry is one of America's great essayists, novelists, and poets. And after he finished his work in academics and creative writing, he went back to his family farm in Kentucky in the south of America and continued to farm it. And he says, a spiritual journey is the name of this, a spiritual journey. And it's by Wendell Berry, B-E-R-R-Y. Our master technical support person, maybe Daniela can write that in. He says, and the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles. And the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey. So then we ask ourselves, what does he mean by spiritual journey? He then says, a journey of 1 inch. A journey of 1 inch, very arduous, very humbling, and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our feet and learn to be at home. Again, and the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch, very arduous and humbling and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground at our feet and learn to be at home. That, you know, T.S. Eliot, the English poet, said, poetry is a raid on the inarticulate. It's a raid on the inarticulate. Octavio Paz, the Latinx author, essayist, poet, said, it allows you to drop into the deep waters of existence. So we can deconstruct this poem, but if you read this poem every day, you can feel into it and how it may make sense to you. You know, cultural anthropologists tell us that leaders in pre-industrialized societies, when they got up, what they would do is they would sing a song or recite a text and then do some practice, sitting quietly or some movement practice. And I say that from the point of view is that this notion of taking a text and internalizing it is very old tradition for ourselves. Very, very old tradition. And that's from Wendell Berry. So here we are on this threshold, I say, and how can we be players and actors and contributors in this threshold? We say, let's come to the life of the body, since it's been so excluded and excised from us. So we open up this feeling field. We open up this energy field. So our awareness grows not only of ourselves, but we see that we're in a field that we share with others. And inside of that, we can ask ourselves to be a participant and a contributor here, a real actor with an open heart and a sense of rigor about my practices. What are the new practices? So this is what I want to say to you. Free your hands for a minute and just turn them palms up. Free your hands. Your hands are palms up. And now bring your hands together and clasp them together. Yeah, do it again. Hands up. Clasp them together. That was easy, right? You didn't even think about that. Everything knew where to go. Why is that? Because that's what you've been doing your whole life. Now what I want you to do is that when I tell you to put your hands up, I want you to do it again, but put your fingers in an opposite position. Bring your fingers together, but in an opposite position. Inside of that, you probably felt this one kind of awkward, weird moment like, where's my forefinger go? Where does that go? Yeah, just like this. Let's do this together. Put your arms to your side. Cross your hands in front of you. Cross your arms in front of you. Yeah, let them drop. Simple, easy. That's what's embodied in you. Now do it the opposite way. Start again. So if you're attending to that, you might have had this, again, this moment of awkwardness or how do I do that? It's a very, you go to your head and go, where does this go? Where does that go? And what I want that to reveal to you is that in order to take a new shape of being, in order of, this is my principle, how do I embody this principle? How am I being this principle? It takes practices. And of all the teachers that I've had in martial arts and in meditation, in where I would have my arguments with God and go, what's next or what about this? They would always say, keep practicing. So I want to leave you with this notion that we can make declarations about our future. I am a commitment to the Two Rock Valley having clean water. That's where I live. And I'm living that. Will it turn out? I don't know. But I have to then ask myself, for that to happen, what new practices do I need to make? Just turned in my book. I have more time. Yay. And then I can go, okay, let me build a network here, for example. So we make a commitment or a declaration about the future. We bring our past and our competency and mastery into that. And then part of that is we go, somebody says, why is that important to you? You go, it's important to me because of this. How do you know when you'll be successful? You go, because it will look like this. not just that I will notice, I will be a different actor, and I will have touched and influenced the world, and allowing the world to touch and influence me. Okay, I'm going to stop. And if you have any questions about what I've said.
I'm sure a lot of people would have the same feeling that I have, that please don't stop. But we're committed with time. There's so many questions in the Q&A box. And because we have, you know, it's good that people can vote. So I'll pick, because we have 4 minutes for that. The top liked question was, which is there a difference between centering and grounding?
Here's how I think about that. When you're centered, you can ground yourself. When you're grounded, you can center yourself. But there's a way that if you imagine you have these sweat socks on and you're on a marble floor in a marble room, you can center yourself, but it might be harder to ground yourself because it's slippery. So it takes a different practice to go, once I collect myself, I've collected myself, how do I want to move my energy? I move it down, ground into the earth. The other way to think about it is that, I'll give you an example of an American football, happens in many sports. The person is running with the ball, they get tackled and they flip in midair. So they've lost their ground, but once they hit the ground, they know the right direction to move in. They've lost the ground, but they've stayed centered.
Well, yay, we can squeeze in another question. So, and that is about bringing somatics into leadership program. You know, key learnings, you know, strategies, something that could support people into bringing this work to the leadership environment.
Good. And Manal, I'm going to warn you ahead of time. I'm going to fight for another minute or two because I have a second poem to read and to lead everybody with.
Okay.
And it's this, like in the cultures in the West, people hold the body as this instrument or this good mule that takes the intellect around. And they use the body as, I'll get more fit, I'll get slimmer, I'll be more flexible, or it's good health for me, but it's still like this tool. And they don't see it as that in this form, there's not a mind and a body and a spirit. They're not in separate buckets. In this shape, which is also deeply connected to a greater field of awareness and energy, is where we think, where we feel, we have emotions, we have moods, we act, we hold dignity, we have groundedness. Now, with that background, what I want to tell you in leadership is you have to build a story of relevance to the person and people, why we need to work through the body and why we need to work with the body. Like I said, when I first introduced this into organizations and people will go, I sit all day. I never use my body. And standing up to them produce all kinds of provocations for them. And what you then have to build is that all that that happened to you as you stood up with your fellow colleagues, that life force, that lies dormant the more that you separate or get away from or disassociate from your body. People think that their thinking is reality. It's this felt sensation right here. This is actually the place of disassociation. This is the place of being here now. And that is what is required for leaders now to be able to act more and more ethically and more morally. And not only that, that we're able to hold our leaders in higher standards. You know, 8 years ago, I was on TV to judge all the candidates. And I said, this is why I'm judging them this way, et cetera. And I'm going to give them a C minus. And the guy said to me, you're a hard grader. And I said, you bet. If I'm going to choose a leader, I want them to live to a certain standard. Yeah. Okay. Hang on, Manal. Here's my poem.
Yes, please bring it on.
This is a poem by American poet called William Stafford. It's called The Way It Is. William Stafford wrote one poem every day, fantastic poet. Poets spend weeks and months and years on one poem. He wrote a poem, edited it, and said, this is it. People said to him, how can you do this? It takes so long to do a good poem. He said, I lowered my standards. So for all you perfectionists, take that in. The way it is. There's a thread you follow. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do, nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. Part of our work is, what is that thread for us in this time of our life? And where can we go inside of our felt, lived bodies and discover that? Titled The Way It Is by William Stafford.
Thank you, Richard. I'll come back with the top tip for embodiment. Thank you so much for such a great session. There's a lot of love and thanks coming to you in the chat. Well, everyone, I'm myself, and I'm sure many other people will share the same. The recording is available. You will listen to it again to digest what Richard has shared with us. And you could also have it, for life by buying just the keynote package or the full library, where you could really sit and digest all the wisdom that is coming from Richard and all the other teachers. And coming up in the keynote channel with us is, where did it go? Yeah, Lori Salzman in the meditation cycle. Check the coffee rooms, get together with other people from sessions, chat and share your thoughts and experiences. And the conversation also continues on the Facebook page. Richard, your top embodiment tip today.
Top embodiment tip. I don't believe in tips and techniques. I believe in being, in the ground of being. But I will say two of them. One is a saying we have at Strozzi Institute, which I'll say last. The first one is, cultivate your feeling and energetic self. Cultivate your feeling and energetic self. And the second thing is what we say at the completion at Strozzi Institute is, take it easy, but take it.
Lovely.
Take it easy, but take it.
Lovely. And we're on the dot. Perfect ending. Thank you very much, Richard. And thank you everyone who have attended and put in questions and shared this space with all of us. And we'll see you in another session.